Perfect. What's the sentence before?
I'll just leave it here, but if for some reason, I do want to do it.
Okay. No, you're right. You're higher. I still see what you guys just did. Yeah. No, it's been terribly quiet. I mean, I wasn't hovering around it, but yeah, separately. Oh, yeah. But he's here because, yeah, I didn't know that. I know that was doing a lot.
There are no, yeah, I remember doing, but, yeah.
Oh, then so let's talk to Jenna ahead of time.
Yeah, perfect.
Two thousand five, wasn't it?
Oh, you can't see that. I'm just saying that my conference and never since.
Yeah, come on. Maybe I should save my money.
Every year they would do that, but.
Wow.
I just like.
Thank you so very much.
We'll be looking at the
Good evening, everybody. It's now 6 p.m. And this is the regular monthly meeting of the Board of Directors of the Yolas Transportation District. It's meeting September 11, 2023. The first thing I'd like to say is because it is September 11, we can celebrate the fact that our democracy is yet alive and well. And as we go forward with our business tonight, we're continuing in that tradition. But we do so with hearts heavy for those who lost their loved ones on that sad day. I would also like to mention that we lost a former board member this past month, that being Jerry Sandy. Supervisor Sandy represented the City of Woodland here some years ago, beloved by all of us and all who knew him, and we are very sad at his passing. And all of us extend his condolences to his family. With that, Madam Clerk, do we have a quorum?
We do have a quorum.
All right, so let the record reflect that all members of the board are present this evening. And now we'll move on.
First thing, Lucas
Ferris, we are the same. Excuse me, Lucas Ferris is in route. We did receive words. Sorry, he has not been yet seated. Just one of many things I'll get wrong tonight. We'll move on to public comments. And you know, we take time on our agenda for anyone to speak to this board about issues that are relevant to this district but are not otherwise on the agenda. We will allow time for public comment on each agenda item as we get to it. Does anyone wish to address our board tonight on an item not otherwise on the agenda? You want to think of something not on the agenda?
Yes.
Please come forward. Mr. Alan Hirsch, welcome.
Thank you very much. First, I'd like to make a general suggestion that in the minutes they don't mention the content of the public comment. I just mentioned a minute, even hint at what the public comment is. I just mentioned somebody spoke. So I mentioned, you might want to at least reference what the subject matter the public comment was speaking on to let the minister complete so they could go back to the full public record. I also hope that the written documents that are submitted are in a public record that might be publicly accessible.
Thank you.
I was at the Woodland City Council meeting on Wednesday, and Tom graciously greeted me, and we have sat across the table quite for 25 years, I think. Yeah,
it was county.
So very gracious, very nice, very interesting. If there are different styles of council within all of them in Yolo County, the Woodland Council is very real. But they presented the Woodland Tech and Research Park, which is a very impressive development of hopefully we'll have 5,000 jobs, 1,650 homes, and probably about 5,000 residents. And the goal for the project is to reduce VMT by 10%. To do that, you need, which is a very low standard, because the county, the state goal is 20%. So I'm quite concerned about that. And I'm concerned that basically the planning of the layout of it, Yoga Bus was not consulted at all, as far as I can tell. So how can we have bus service in there when we haven't planned the bus layout and the transit center they have in there that's consistent with buses? We shouldn't just have the planner do the thing without safely working with the transit agency so the flow works. Because the buses that deviate off our main flow have to cost more money. We're going to do that in Davis, that village farm development, and then that with the transit agency and say, gee, yes, that's not right. Let's not put a transit center in this big development in Davis. Let's put it on Whole Line and then Covell. I hope that was a win-win for everybody. But I didn't see that happen in Woodland. And then you're already finished. And I'm quite concerned there's almost no documentation about the MT reduction, which is really very important. And I'm concerned, I also want to note that basically, in the EIR, it said that congestion was not a concern. It said right in the EIR.
Yeah, it's 3 minutes.
Woodland doesn't think that congestion is an important part of the EIR. And that's what the state law says at this point. So I hope that our focus in the discussion of EIR, we do not focus on congestion. We focus on VMT and the real environmental impacts. Thank you very much.
And thank you for speaking. Anyone else wish to address our board on something on the agenda tonight? If not, we'll move along. And the first thing I'd like to do is to invite our executive director, Arm Bernstein, to introduce this wonderful new staff member.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good evening, members of the board and members of the audience. Great to have you with us. I'm very excited to introduce Chaz Pedrico, who is our new Director of Finance and Administration. She joined us most recently from the Vallejo Flood and Wastewater District. She's got 26 years in the accounting field, 16 of them in the public sector. And she's a SACFIG alumni twice over.
Fingers up.
She met her husband in high school. She has 4 kids and an Akita dog named Coda. So I can say that Chaz has been here for just a couple of weeks, and she has already got so many plans and making a lot of the positive changes. So we're just thrilled to have her here.
Welcome, Chaz. Anybody with 4 children can handle a lot.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here. I look forward to getting to know all of you and working with you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Welcome.
All right. With that, we'll move on to the consent calendar, items 3A through 3E. And you'll notice in your staff report a corrected amount, 3E. We can't get 2 buses for $93,000, which we could. It's a lot more, and that's correctly reflected both in the resolution as well as the correct staff report. Any discussion by the board on items 3A through 3E before we take public comment? There being none, is there any public comment on items 3A through 3E? Okay, bring it back to the board. Is there a motion?
With approval of the consent calendar as submitted, my apologies for being a minute late. It's just coming from a closed session on the advisors.
No worries.
Second.
Okay, motion by Director Lupin. Second to
By Director Irvin.
Thank you, Director Irvin. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The consent calendar is adopted as submitted. The corrected amount mentioned at 3D. Moving on to the regular calendar, item 5 is the YOLO 880 Managed Lanes Project. An overview of the draft environmental document, which is not yet in hand, but Brian, who's in thin straw and gold, is not able to tell us about where we are on this project. And Autumn, did you want to start by introducing? Okay, and Brian, Alvin.
Good evening, Jeff Bauer, and I'm with the board, Brian Abinett, acting the planning director for the Old Transportation District. The item before you today is not an overview of the draft environmental document because that has not been released yet, but I do want to recognize that the Greg Wong from Caltrans District 3 is here with us to answer any questions that you might have related to the project from their perspective. So instead, you get just a more generalized update on the 80 management project. And as you all know, it's an ever evolving project, lots of twists and turns. And from staff's perspective, it kind of feels like a bit of a roller coaster. But some aspects are starting to become more clear in contrast to some of the updates that we gave earlier in the summer. So if you'll recall, back in July, the two main updates there were that the draft environmental document was being delayed in part because District 3 and headquarters needed some additional time to coordinate on that document. And also the big news was that we were not awarded the $103 million grant application that we had submitted to the Trade Corridor Enhancement Program. And that was funding source that was largely going to fill the funding gap that we had for the whole management project. And so this month we thought we would be giving you an update on the draft environmental document, but that hasn't quite crossed the finish line yet. So if you want to switch to the next slide, right? So they're putting on final touches. The staff report stated that it was going to be released on the 6th, and that was the information that we had at the time. But we also want, to make clear that our goal as staff, consistent with this board's policy direction, our goal is to have the project environmentally cleared with old managed lanes with express lanes. The other thing that has, occurred over the last, month or so is sort of a collective consensus between headquarters at Caltrans District 3 and the OLTD to prioritize obligating the $86 million infra funds that we do have. In other words, not letting those forfeit. So that's a big, I think, accomplishment is that we're all working together to try to get, this project delivered. And what that project looks like sort of depends on how you define the project and how you define the various phases. Right now, Caltrans District 3 is looking at, phase one build options. The idea here is that anything that gets built in a phase one or a phase two, if we're talking about a multi-phase project, that all those interim phases are, complement and sort of set the foundation for the ultimate toll management project that we would like to see. So next slide, please. Right, and so we have this $86 million in hand, and the recognition that when you look at the full 34 miles of toll managed lanes, if it's cost in the $300 million range, or more, $86 million is not going together there. And so, all of the build options that include tolling, are not within the budget that we have for this first phase. So it's a distinct possibility that this first interim phase may not include tolling. But the silver lining in that cloud is that, we were given, some verbal commitments from Caltrans, statewide executive director and District 3, so we're all recognizing that there will need to be continued investment into this corridor, and they were willing to commit to continuing to do that. So that was a good sign, from our standpoint. But then also stepping back a little bit, just recognizing the significance of this segment of I-80 and Highway 50 as part of a larger Northern California mega region express lane facility continuous. So from the Bay Area all the way through Sacramento region, this is an integrated facility. And that more locally here in the region, that the express lane, toll managed lane project is consistent with regional transportation policies as clearly identified in the Metropolitan Transportation Plan and Sustainable Community Strategy. Most of you are already aware of this, but just sort of bringing everybody back up to speed as to sort of where we are from the staff perspective. Next slide. And then finally, last slide here is, we are continuing to obligate the $2 million funding that we received from SACOG in their recent regional funding round. And the benefit here is that it will allow us to continue that momentum towards, a final, project that would include Old Main Plan. And then we're also going to continue to do a lot of the work in the background that our council, Kirk Coase, has been doing and engaging regional stakeholders around the idea of a tolling authority, whether it's a joint powers authority or whatever form it takes. That's still a role that we intend to continue playing in leading the region in those discussions. So that's where we are right now. I'll leave it there. If you ask any questions, we're happy to do so. But that's where we are.
Thank you. Board members, questions, comments?
Mr. Chair, I just want to note that our special counsel, Kirk Coase, is on the Zoom. So if there are questions for him about any of the governance work that is happening, he's available.
Well, we know he's reducing vehicle miles traveled by sitting in his comfortable home in there. So good evening, Kirk, wherever you are. All right.
Good to see you all.
Okay. Thank you. All right. We will then go to public comment. No, did he lose speak?
Yeah, I guess. For sure. One quick, question. I know they, the staff addressed this a little bit, but so when are we anticipating the draft EIR to be released for them?
Why don't we actually go to Greg and Caltrans if he wants to share some updates on that, and then I can jump in as well.
Thanks so much.
That's okay. I deserve it. Thank you, everybody, and it's good to see you all. I wish I had been but I will say that we are close. And as Brian said, we still need a little bit more time to coordinate the release. But I will also say that, I wanted to be here in person to share that, but also share the fact that, we got this close because of our partnership with you and specifically Ron and Brian, 2 weeks ago. We got to go ahead. Now it's just consistency reviews, legal sufficiency reviews, various communication internal. Took longer than we expected. So, the partnership helped. And like I said, we're close. I'm not giving you a date. I'll communicate every day with your executive director on Profit Rudy, so she's getting the updates.
I will just share from my perspective that I'm quite concerned about the continuing delay. We do, in order to obligate the FDA's plan and federal funds, we have to have a certified environmental document or we will forfeit that money. And we know we have a robust amount of community engagement and interest in this process, which is how it ought to be. What I communicated to the Caltrans director, and I'm texting and emailing everybody at the state that I know these days, is that we've got to get the CIR on the street. It's not perfect. We've seen an internal draft. We know it's got issues. But that's why you have a draft, and then you talk about it, and then you make changes in the final. So we hope that draft will be available as soon as possible.
Well, thank you, everybody, for essentially no answer, but I
understand. Yeah.
Any additional board member questions or comments? There being none, we will go to the public hearing. And, excuse me, public comment. This is the hearing, the official hearing tonight. And, Alan, I know you want to speak, so why don't you come on up?
Mr. Chair, I believe that Heather's got a list of speaker cards.
Oh, it's Heather. I just always remember to talk to my clerk before I do anything. So, who's going to lead us off?
Forrest,
come on. And please introduce yourself, all right?
Hello. My name is Forrest Oldham, a resident of Woodland.
Welcome.
Thank you. And members here, I appreciate the opportunity to talk. I would really like to have a little more time than this, you're going to give me.
3 minutes, I'm sorry.
Yeah, unfortunately.
There was a rule.
I'm going to give you a list of affiliations, but I'm not representing any one of them per se, but they are all affected by it. Okay, I belong to the Woodland Camera Forum, the Goldrush Chapter of the Photographer Society of America. I belong to the California Flag Pictures Unlimited. As a matter of fact, I'm president of that organization. And also, I'm a member of the Yolo County Taxpayers Association. And I'm an Uber driver. Now, again, I'm not representing any one of those, but all those are affected. And it is my belief that we need more lanes in that corridor. But I don't think they should be exclusive lanes for people of privilege. Okay? I drive that corridor a lot. I've changed my Uber behavior because of the congestion in that area, as well as the congestion now on Highway 5 going south from Woodland.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I completely avoid the traffic jam as much as I can. But I also see this sort of a thing down in the Bay Area. I end up going from Redding to Fresno to San Jose, Santa Rosa, Grass Valley, Auburn, Reno, you name the city, Northern California wise. I've probably been there and probably been there many, many times as an Uber driver, let alone a fly fisherman or a photographer. Is that it? I've written a book called California Covered Bridges Pre-1900. It's the story of the covered bridges that came about as a function of the gold rush. Okay, if you know your history in California, the gold rush began in 1949 and the state became a state in 1850. One of the very first acts that the state Congress enacted was permission for private parties to build bridges across the rivers that commerce can move. Without those bridges, you do not have the California we have today. It's a function of getting the people's services and products and things moving back and forth. Okay? And at that time, back in the Gold Rush era, there was as many as 350 covered bridges there in Northern California. How many of them do you know exist right now? Any of you have any idea of anyone? Anywhere?
I guess six or fewer.
Yeah, there's only six that still remain. Okay?
Pulled
right out of my hat. Yeah. Exactly. There was a seventh one. It burned up in the Paradise Fire. Again, that was by a decision of a group of people to try and deal with a problem and by putting it in a box, and the box didn't necessarily deliver the result that we all wanted.
Yeah. If you take your 3 minutes, you might pick up.
3 minutes now?
Yeah. Concluding comment?
You need the additional lanes to move the traffic through to avoid the congestion, which also results in other environmental impacts by the cars not using their fuel efficiently.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate your taking the time to come tonight.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Who is next?
Ken.
Ken?
Sure.
And by coming, let me just say Ken is a former mayor of the city of Davis, and I'm really glad to see him here tonight with us. Welcome, Ken.
Thanks, Tom. Let's see, 3 minutes. When you have as much history in this area as I do, 3 minutes does not seem like a very long time. But I think it actually is long enough for me to make my theme clear about I-80 and what the possibilities might be for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're part of that future, and we're all counting on it. and a huge bureaucracies, no offense, that sometimes get in the way. I just want to read you something that I wrote myself. It's only one sentence, I think. Maybe it's two. Oh, by the way, in terms of my background, I think somebody mentioned background. You can look at my page on Davis Wiki. Anybody still look at the Wiki? There's a Wiki. You can find me on Wiki. I think Lucas knows that. At least they spelled my name right, Lucas. I go back a bit. I go back over 50 years in this area. And I was on this board. And Christopher Walden and I had a vision. And that vision, say this, which I said at that meeting, the last meeting I attended at the Davis Liaison in 2000. So here we were at the millennium. So what's the millennium mean? 2000 means you're looking back, but you're looking ahead. I'm not a transportation expert. I don't pretend to be, but I think regional leadership doesn't require technical expertise. It requires vision. Now, I'm very concerned about the environment for my grandchildren, but I'm also concerned about a bridge to the future from where we are right now. A practical, actionable $9 million bridge to something that we could have for our grandchildren. It could be an HOV lane, an express bus. It could be someday light rail. It could even be something that leverages vision and gets folks like our representatives in Congress, our representatives in the Capitol, our representatives here in Sacramento, to see that we can make a difference, and we got to think fresh about change. So I'm in favor of adding the capacity on I-80 that will allow express buses, HOV, automobiles, and maybe give an exemption for electric. I don't know. Think about it. But I think this organization that I'm speaking to right now is the cutting edge of something. And I think you should let it go. And sometimes I get the feeling, you know, well, we're almost there. You know, we don't have the money we thought we'd have on time and so on. Listen, you guys are at the cutting edge.
Right.
Make some phone calls. Get it done. Thank you.
Thanks for coming, Henry Wilson. Glad you're here tonight.
How about you?
Our third speaker.
Tony.
Tony, come forward, please. Again, please introduce yourself. We welcome you tonight.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Tony Phillips. I'm from South Davis. And I'm just here speaking on behalf of, like, my wife and my daughter and those who live in South Davis that I know who use the YOLO bus to get to Sacramento, Old Sacramento, those places. And just wanted to give some anecdotes. First of all, I am in support of adding the lane. Just that my wife started using the YOLO bus back in 2017. It picked up right in front of our house at Drummond and Child. And then it got moved over by Nugget on Mace. Now it's over on other end of Mace in front of University Covenant Church. So it's gotten a little more inconvenient. There was a pandemic and that made things hard. She started driving more, and but she didn't want to. Right? And she actually even had a car accident recently on the causeway. She prefers to take the bus, but in the last 2 years, with the amount of congestion, it's not reliable. It's just late for work. And so, and I know a lot of my neighbors also were using it, have backed off from using it because it's become less reliable. So adding another lane, I think, would be a good solution to this problem. Also, my daughter is a senior. She's going to graduate, and she wants to go to Sac City. And so she also is scared to death of driving on the causeway, and she would like to take a YOLO bus. And again, same thing, if she's late to class, it's not going to work out. Thank you for listening. I hope we can get this done. We can have a lane.
Again, thank you for your time coming tonight.
Yeah.
Next up.
Barry.
Oh, Ms. Barry Broom, the distinguished leader of Greater Sacramento Economic Council. Thank you, Barry, for taking the time to come to us tonight.
And Mr. Chair, thank you.
Yeah, so, you know, I never weigh in too often on local issues, but I think supporting this expansion is important because of the growth that's starting to occur here in the region, the bottleneck. I think other, you know, obviously there's local and environmental concerns I'm not qualified to speak on, and I'm sure that you're hearing this out, but, you know, we're leaving way too much match money on the table right now. You know, we have unprecedented infrastructure dollars. We can't afford to miss an $85 million match. And so, you know, from an economic perspective, which is all we are qualified to speak on, you know, the expansion lane is going to be an important part of distributing goods and services. We also hope it reduces, right, traffic, mitigates traffic and get into our communities and neighborhoods like Davis. And I think a lot of the Davis residents are concerned about traffic and, you know, they're right to be concerned about this. And I think this gives us a chance to balance some of the development objectives. You know, if you look at downtown Sacramento, government made one decision and took 73,000 jobs out of the downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the key missions of GSEC is, when we started SOM, as you know, in 2015, we were at the bottom in the United States in inclusion and equity data because, you know, government's not a very good equity player. You've got to have graduate degrees and PhDs to work on. You know, we're now in the top five in U.S. inclusion, top 22 in equity. It's because we've been building these industry strategies and connecting people to it. We've also been able to do that with an eye on climate change, like mobility, which is going to be some real important announcements. So I'm hoping that we can find that proper balance between respect for the environment and respect for all views on community sustainability, capture these important federal dollars, and you know, be able to grow the economy in a more intelligent, healthy way. We need 128,000 jobs in the next 15 years to be as stable as a capital region as you would typically see in places like Columbus and Indianapolis. So we have a lot of work to do. We've got great momentum now. We obviously we've got some social concerns. We have to cope with that as a state. But it should be, next 3 to 5 years should be a moment in which we really start to peak and people really get to know and respect us as a community. And I think this will be an important contribution to the infrastructure. So thank you for your time, Mr. Chairman.
And thank you again for coming tonight. It's my pleasure.
Next speaker,
Brett.
Brett? Or Brett?
Oh,
Brett. Brett Lee, another former mayor of Davis. It's a big night here at the Transportation Station. Welcome, Brett.
So thank you for allowing me to speak for your group. I wasn't sure I was going to speak, but I thought out of an abundance of caution, I would put my speaker card. I didn't know how strict you were, but I guess a statement of habit, I will speak. Hi, my name is Brett Lee. I know most of you would consider many of you good friends.
With some exception.
That is not why I am here tonight. I'm here out of self-interest. I'm here because, like many in Davis, I use the causeway to get to and from work each day. I commute to my job because I am required to be at work. These are not discretionary steps. I support adding a well-regulated express lane to the causeway. And importantly, I believe the majority of residents also support this. The federal money that has been awarded is specifically for this purpose. The choice is either to add the express lane or give the money back to the government. That is the choice, yes or no, add the express lane or send the money back. Right now, the bus is always slower than a car. I know this firsthand from riding the bus to work. It is always slower. Always. By adding a well-regulated express lane, we will be encouraging people to do the right thing, carpool or take transit. Wouldn't it be nice if the bus trip becomes a faster, more convenient option? I agree with Alan Hirsch on 90% of what he said. I consider him also a good friend. We just end up at a different conclusion. I believe that climate change is real, and I believe in induced demand. Induced demand says basically that over time, the additional lane will fill up. I would guess that if you added a general purpose lane, it will fill up rather quickly, while a well-regulated express lane will take longer to fill up. What if we do nothing? What if we just send the money back as some are advocating for? The general data seems to indicate that traffic gridlock will become more frequent and will last for longer durations. Magnitudes are important here. We are not talking about a 20% or 30% increase. We are talking about a doubling of the frequency and duration of the delays. A doubling. There have been many ideas for addressing some of our challenges that have been brought up in the recent discussion. Improved transit networks, increased frequency of rail service, better cycling infrastructure. This grant cannot be used for those things, but it does not preclude you from pursuing those options in the future with other grants. I am here today because we have two choices. Add the express lane and create an incentive for people to carpool and take transit, or send the money back and worsen the cut-through traffic in our neighborhoods and the ongoing delays for people who use the causeway for essential trips. Thank you for your time. I appreciate the work that you do.
I think it's great. Appreciate your time as well.
Corey?
Please introduce yourself. Welcome.
Howdy. My name is Corey Day. I'm the chair for the Davis Chamber of Commerce. On May 25th, 2023, the Chamber submitted a letter supporting a YOLO 80 managed lane program for the California Recreation Commission. I've submitted a copy of that letter to the clerk of the board. I requested the letter be made part of the record. The letter set forth 11 separate reasons to approve the project, including 1, improving throughput and reliability for freight vehicles, 2, improving travel time, and 3, enhancing safety. Other reason in the letter, explained all the time. So I understand the project may be somewhat different than what was envisioned previously. Even with those changes, the Chamber believes the project will be beneficial for the Davis business community, and thus we support it. Thank you for your time.
Appreciate your comment. Thank you. Next speaker.
We have Al on Zoom.
Al on Zoom. Are you right out there, Al?
Yeah, I was just confused because I saw Alan Hirsch, so I thought you were saying Alan Hirsch.
So please introduce yourself, Al.
This is Alan Miller. I'm speaking today as a citizen of Davis. I am really tired of being gaslit about so many aspects of this project, such as that there's a VMT benefit to hugely investing in the Capitol Corridor versus continuing to build out this gigantic highway project. But despite the fact that that's what's in the report, that's not what is being emphasized. Also, this idea that having toll lanes is actually also beneficial for people who don't have money. Well, the other day I was going about 5 miles, and to get into the managed lane in the South Bay was $20 for one day. Also, this idea that infrastructure subsidies for new development actually is beneficial in reducing VMTs. Please. Despite the fact that Caltrans policy is for multimodal, the actions being taken and the funding being given say no, we're still a highway organization. And of course, the greatest myth of all, that added lanes actually are going to make a positive difference. The problem is you run into the same infrastructure at each end and you just end up benefiting people like those who are investing in the mega suburbs in rural Solano County and the giant new twin Folsom being built south of 50, which if you've ever gone out there and looked at it, is one of the ugliest things ever. Transportation is the key to reducing VMT, as you can invest massively in rail, such as they have done in Japan and in Europe. What you do is you create incentive for people to densify without having to pass laws where you say things like, oh, people will use public transit, but the public transit doesn't exist. This is a radical idea which all of you need to jump onto. Otherwise, we are going to end up like Orange County. But here, all I hear is highway widening. Oh, well, of course. Thank you.
Thank you again for calling in. Next speaker.
Gabriel on Zoom.
You have 3 minutes. Please introduce yourself, Gabriel.
Hi, my name is Gabriel Ehrlich. I'm calling in from Davis. I'm glad to hear some public comment about the need for public transportation. We definitely have a problem. The congestion is definitely a problem for getting from one place to another. And I hear some people saying just overall this project is a good idea for it because it has lanes. And that seems like a solution. We certainly have money for a solution. I wanted to contribute my understanding based on what I've been reading and listening to that the only way to permanently solve this problem is to create a massive change from individuals driving their own vehicles by themselves to using viable alternatives to driving like buses and trains. Obviously, this money can't be used for anything but the kind of thing we're considering here. But it seems to me like what we need to do is consider the different alternatives. I haven't heard much discussion of that. The goal, like if we can build a bus lane, for example, the goal should be to get people into, like single people who would rather not even be driving at all into other modes of transportation. The best thing that we can do to ease traffic for the people who do have to drive to get the people who don't have to drive not to drive. the opportunity here, I think, is to pave the way for transportation, for public transit to be better in the future. And it seems to me like the best alternative in that situation is a transit-only lane. I would prefer if there were an alternative available that didn't involve adding that extra lane, but that doesn't seem to be an option at this point. And I also wanted to make a point about congestion, which is often used as an excuse, like the environmental impacts of congestion, which are often used as justification for, like an environmental justification for adding more lanes to improve throughput. Especially with modern vehicles, many of which are electric or hybrid or turn their engines off when they're stalled, that's just not a consideration. Congestion does not have a noticeable environmental impact. Increased driving does. So I hope that the board can find something to do with this money that's available that does have a positive environmental impact and can solve the congestion problem. And it seems to me like the best way to do that is something that makes it possible for transit to be more efficient in the future.
Thank you, Gabriel. Appreciate your calling in. Next speaker.
We have Alan Hirsch.
That's Mr. Alan Hirsch. Welcome once again.
Thank you. I've been going to these meetings probably the most frequent attender other than Lucas. I'm amazed that no one has mentioned climate change. I thought we had a crisis here. I thought this is really important, and it's going to take precedent over other things. I'm kind of amazed. So we know that increased EMT is related to greenhouse gases is 40% of the cut states, and 7%, 65% of Davis is greenhouse gases, and 75% of winter is greenhouse gases. But we're going to encourage people by driving more. And we really don't provide the transit alternative, but Tom, you mentioned the beautiful job we've made on the Capitol Corridor. You seem to have forgotten that 10 years ago they moved the station, the Capitol Corridor, 2/10 of a mile further from downtown Sacramento. Yes, the fares are exceedingly high. $9 one way to go to Davis to Sacramento. That beautiful? I'm sorry, there's no transit alternative. And when we do the construction work in 15 Sacramento, they did transit mitigation to give people a chance. There was nothing discussion about it. We had construction on 80,000. There's no talk about transit improvements to mitigate that because there's no transit to improve. And Tom and I have been talking a long time about this. It's a long dialogue here. Tom, living in Tom's world, he was chair of Takeoff 20 years ago. He had set for the transit. And when he did an editorial from 1999 to Sacramento Bee. Sacramento's 1999 Metropolitan Transit Plan lays out a $15 million program of improvements covering 24 years. Spending $15 million for outcomes like these, these are take outcomes, is regional economic suicide path. We are living in Tom Stoller's world. With the congestion, with the air pollution, with the BMT increases, Tom is a wonderful man. He has given thousands of hours. But he is a Herbert Hoover. And we need an FDR to do the Green New Deal in this city. We need some leadership from you to change things. We need a different way of transportation. And this is the same old, same old. We need to turn Caltrans around. And that's to take civilian leadership, not the state thing. So, Tom, you're a wonderful man, but your plan to build in freeways is not solving the problems. We need a new way of working this world. If we care about climate change. Thank you.
And thank you as always, Alan. Are there any additional speakers?
We do not have any additional speakers.
Is anyone else wish to speak tonight before we end public comments? So thank you all. I mean, this is democracy. We're here in the people's country. Our friends and we'd like to say something. You know, we only get to speak one time.
I'm sorry, only one. Oh, I'm sorry.
You're out of order, sir.
It's a democracy. This is not a democracy.
All right, it's not a democracy, but we're moving on, sir. Thank you. I appreciate everybody's courtesy and understanding the rules under which we operate our meetings. This is a information-only item. Is there any additional action to be taken tonight?
I have no action tonight, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. That concludes our discussion on item 5, and I welcome calls from anybody anytime outside the meeting. Let's continue then with item 6. This is the Americans with Disability Act Rider Policy Application and Service Area Update. And Autumn, do you want to introduce the item, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be quickly sending it over to Courtney Williams, who has a chance to get settled. Our Senior Transportation Center is leading on this item. And we do have a slide deck that I'm sure Heather will be pulling up momentarily.
Courtney, we welcome you here tonight.
Thank you. Good evening to the board. I present this little transition from our previous item. So I'm here to talk about today an update that staff has been working on regarding the ADA rider policy, our application process, and updates for our service area. So since I have to frame this discussion and presentation as an information item, staff has been going through to the start of this fiscal year, looking at different policies and documents and guidelines that need to be updated. And so what's next in our agenda right now that we're working on is a complete evaluation of our ADA policies as it relates to the paratransit service that we provide. And so with that, we've taken into consideration the name of the, what we currently have is Yellow Bus Special, kind of changing that name as well, just kind of alter the connotations. We also have changes as well for our rider guide. The application process is something that we're currently looking over as well to see what we can do to streamline, make it a bit more efficient. Changes to the rider policy are, there's only one change that we've kind of recommended so far. And then changes to the service area and service plan. And so this is important as I'll touch on when we get to that slide, but part of one of the requirements is making sure that our paratransit service matches what we currently provide for fixed route. And since we're operating currently on a limited fixed route schedule post-COVID, our paratransit service has yet to be changed to accommodate that. So this formalizes that process with the updates.
I know this is that important. Again, the suggestion to name be changed from Yolo Bus Special to Yolo Mobile. And I see that the advisory committee has favorably recommended that. But there's no action tonight. Will that come back to us at another meeting?
Yeah. So thank you. Yeah. So at the October meeting, I'm planning to come back with a full action that includes the name change and all of the updates for the policy document for you. And so from this meeting today, it's really a staff recommendation based off the feedback that I've written in the staff report from the advisory committee, as well as any other comments or ideas or suggestions that you have, what I'll be talking about today. So we have the next slide. So just kind of a background, I'm not going to read the slide entirely, but part of the requirement of ADA is to make sure that we have a similar accessible paratransit service for those that are what are qualified as disadvantaged. And within that, there are the four criteria that are used from the ADA legislation that I'll kind of get to in the next slide on how a transit agency would go about from receiving an application to making a designation. So with that, another one of the requirements is that with fixed route, for any transit agency that's operating fixed route service, they have to operate paratransit service within that 3/4 of a mile of the fixed route. So it's kind of an overlay. So when we're thinking just in the context of what will be updated, the service really should be mirroring what we operate, but more accessible for wheelchair riders or neurodivergent or other individuals, other concerns that a rider may have, preventing them from using fixed routes. So we'll go to the next slide. And so kind of as the staff are like looking through our previous ridership data, one of the big surprises that we had when compared to our fixed routes is that paratransit has actually recovered ridership and maintains ridership a lot better than our fixed route service. So one of the things that we've noticed is correlated with the route is an increase in enrollment and applicants. And so within the region, we currently have over 1,000 registered applicants, and we're averaging roughly about 10 to 15 per month. And so with that in mind, it was kind of how to date our policies and our documents are, and also thinking about how do we want to be forward thinking with noticing this trend and coming up with a more streamlined process. That is part of the reason with the couple together for us to kind of attack a lot of these changes that have been done. And so we'll go to the next slide, then. So starting off, simply put, so just the old bus special name changed that to Yolo Mobile. Sometimes the special name is the only thing you see on our paratransit vehicles. That's just something that, you know, we did a little outreach talking to a few folks who use paratransit service. So we felt this is a much more kind of neutral name that still reflects what people need to know.
Yeah.
The next slide. So changes in the rider guide that we're currently looking at really is just formatting, updating the tables and table contents, holiday schedules. There's some, the current schedule that we have two additional, the current schedule that we use does not account for the two additional holidays we receive. So on that end, just making sure that we're up to date currently with the fixed route changes in the holiday service we have in the documentation that we use that we give to our riders. So you go to the next slide. On the application process, one of the big things we're working on is updating it from just a physical document that they have to mail in to also a digital application that they can fully edit and use online, making sure that digital application is also ADA accessible so they need a reader to go through the table. They can actually use the assistive device, and then that will, again, just increase the accessibility for applying. We're also looking at, or we're changing the days in which we would plan to respond from just 21 days to 21 working days, which really actually kind of shortens the timeline of response that applicants receive as opposed to 21 just general days. And so in addition to that, we're looking at ways in which we can kind of change and strengthen the verification process and make it easier. The current process we have right now requires them to, you know, schedule a doctor visit in order to have verification of their illness. So we're looking at different alternative methods that don't require them to tether out different pieces of information for a service that they need or are eligible for. And then next slide. So the changes for our rider policy, really the biggest change was changing the fugitive language for suspension policy, and then also adding more flexibility for suspension policy or missed rides. Talking with our operators next door, this is not an issue that they're dealing with in terms of having to suspend riders, in terms of having delinquent issues with riders. So having the previous policy where it was 60 days and that you could not have like any account for three infractions before being suspended, as opposed to what we're proposing where it refreshes every 30 days. And if you have three infractions, then you would receive your first suspension. So again, just making it a bit more flexible to accommodate the fact that you really don't have major issues on paratransit service drivers. Next slide. So the last part is what I talked about earlier is the changes to our service time that we currently, that we have to reflect our fixed route service. So this includes Woodland Davis and West Sacramento, our inner city service, our Sacramento premium service, Winter's premium, and Nice Lands and Springs. And I'll go through the changes and what that means in regards to the city name and premium. So currently on paratransit, we have a premium service for certain parts of downtown Sacramento, where there are hospitals that are located without outside of the area that our fixed route operates. So that's where the Sacramento premium would be classified as. To make sure that we are offering like-for-like service, since we do not operate fixed route service within Winters and Nice Landing, but we do for V-Line, we're adding that as a premium service, meaning that it is accessible for a paratransit rider to go to the same destinations that we offer within our microtransit service. For Woodland, Davis, and West Sacramento, these cities all have routes that we were cut due to COVID. For Woodland, that includes the 210 and 214. For Davis, that's the 220. And then for West Sacramento, that's the 35. What this does is this affects the local start time for the paratransit service. So prior for West Sacramento, we were operating service as early as 4 a.m. with the proposed cuts now to make sure that it is in alignment with fixed route service, that will be starting at 6 a.m. And so we have a larger chart I just have in the slides, but I can definitely make that available to you that goes over the specific route change with the time. And you guys might see that as well. But for this presentation, this is more of the high-level explanation of the service changes as it relates to our service area from what we previously operated fixed route to what we do currently, and then making sure it's in alignment with our microtransit. Next slide.
That concludes your report?
Yes.
Well, thank you very much. And we'll now ask the board members to comment.
Question. On the changes that, I just want to make sure I'm speaking up. On the changes for the timing, I'm assuming you've looked at ridership and in this instance, just making sure it lines up, does it actually impact riders? So are, for instance, what's that? Are you getting ridership at 4 a.m. or are they just busy?
We're getting maybe a couple of just riders that are on that repeatedly request the service to our scheduled appointments.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your question, yes, we're getting riders. Is it a high ridership number? No. But part of the rules that we're making sure that we're abiding by is operating service that is in alignment with the hours that we operate the fixed route.
I mean, I'm wondering, I understand that. Another, there are rules. So, we make them. Meaning that we're aligning it because we said so, not because it's a policy. So I mean, it could change if, for instance, there's a need. And so my only concern would be if you have ridership at those times and you cut it, then you know you are likely impacting people potentially, particularly because it's continual ridership. And so outside of the fact that we want to line them up, why would we?
Right. So from a federal standpoint, it is required that we operate like-for-like service for paratransit and fixed route.
God, so it's not, these aren't our rules.
No,
that bureaucracy we were hearing about earlier.
Right, this is getting in line with the policies.
If I can jump in, there's nothing in the ADA that prohibits us from doing above and beyond. The ADA is the minimum, that we have to offer the same service for ADA paratransit riders that we offer for able-bodied.
We could keep the same time. So it's not that we're required to reduce timing.
That's correct.
We're choosing to.
That's correct.
Just want to make sure I understand.
Yes. So if I can just add on to that, I think this is why we wanted to bring this to you before. We're bringing it to you as a final because there are trade-offs involved, absolutely. And so when we go above and beyond ADA, we're, for example, like with our premium service that Courtney mentioned that goes to like hospitals and our cave, for example, that are well outside our service area, we're offering that. We're going above and beyond ADA because that's a choice. And that's a choice the board has made in the past and could continue to make. But we wanted to bring this to you now to kind of have that, start that conversation with you because ridership is increasing so dramatically, and it is an extremely expensive service to provide. And with our driver shortages, et cetera, we are living in a world of constrained resources and everything is getting more expensive. So I think we need to find the balance between, again, making sure we're not taking away, you know, service that people really rely on, but also making sure we're being as efficient, being efficient with our limited resources.
And so, Blizzard, I appreciate that, right? Which is this sense of trade-off and have it, you have an action for revenue number six to make that choice.
Absolutely. So what I'm making a note of is that we need to understand the ridership for these cuts and how many people would be impacted by this change that we're talking about.
And the cost, right? Because I think that's what you're suggesting is the trade-off, is that, hey, it's more expensive to provide above and beyond. And so for me, I would be interested in knowing what is the cost, right, trade-off, and then who are we actually impacting? Because if you have, particularly in this case, individuals who are in significant need of these services that are continuing to rise, that would indicate to me that they're relying on this service and we're going to cut it. And so what is that worth?
Okay. That concludes your question. Thank you. Anne?
Yeah, just a couple questions. The first one is, so if somebody fills out the paperwork and they apply, is there a part in the paperwork that says that, say, they have a temporary pass, when it expires, is there an expiration date, or is it something that you reapply every year, or is it you apply once and you can do SARCANSA in perpetuity? Yeah,
so we currently have it as a 2-year policy, but they need to reapply every 2 years, just as a verification process. So there isn't a, once you sign up for once, you're good to go forever. And that's just to make sure that if there's any changes with the rider to move, no longer lives in the area, or other things have occurred that we're just able to update our system. So that's the current policy, is that we have a skill set that every 2 years we're going to update. With the service changes, or with the document changes that we're proposing or planning to propose, we're going to do essentially a deep analysis of everyone that we have within our system, and then probably send out updates to reflect the new application that we have. And then from there, we'll kind of have a fresh start of all our current clients that we have, and then restart that call.
Okay, and then say we'd like to just have some questions about Leonard. So Winners used to have the 220, that was our fixed route. I don't remember the hours of that fixed route. Do you recall the hours that Winners had the 220?
I do not.
Okay. I don't either. But we don't have it anymore, but we have microtransit. And there are people that feel like the microtransit hours are definitely based on the availability from our transit agency, not the availability or need based in Winners. So my question is, if Winners doesn't have the 220 anymore, but it's going to be based on microtransit, but microtransit doesn't feel like the hours are adequate, are the hours available actually serving that population in a balanced way as compared to what was it at 4 a.m.? We start at 9. We end at, 4:30? You got that is much later. So, I understand that these are ADA rules that, one would be based on fixed route, but then if you don't have a fixed route, you're using the NASA-based thing. But I'm just not sure the next phase thing has a reflection of equity for the community. So I just would like to see some more information on that.
For microtransit or paratransit?
Okay, so what you're saying is that paratransit is based on being equitable with having those committed lines like the 220. Since Winners doesn't have that, You're using the hours of microtransit as the object of parity. So I'm saying that the object of parity is a bit arbitrary if that doesn't serve the population well. So I was wondering if there's some other way of providing that service to the community earlier or later, because maybe microtransit isn't available in an equitable way for those communities.
Yeah.
So yeah, we can get back to you with the information on how the feline hours of operation differ from the 220, and then what that, and then how many people would be impacted by that change. Thank you.
Sure. I'd like to ask a question. As I recall, some of our feline vehicles will be paratransit friendly. They'll have handicap accessibility. Do we intend to use them in conjunction with specialized vehicles for strictly for paratransit? So that service is available to our people.
So we have four of our vehicles that will be ADA accessible. They can be reserved as in a flexible use for our paratransit fleet. Currently, we do not have that planned, but it is something that we can use. And why I say currently we don't have that planned is it depends on how service is used with our microtransit service. If we're at capacity with our microtransit vehicles, that's less likely. But if, as we get ridership information and we see that the service hours that we're offering, we're not getting the ridership we're looking at, then that could be a secondary use for our paratransit service.
Thank you. Questions, colleagues?
Thank you, sir. And thank you for taking a deep dive on this. It's nice when these documents sit around for a while to get dusted off and get for exactly the reasons that we're sitting here. Having these discussions today, thank you to my colleagues for your questions as well. To get going clear on the Winters piece, so like if somebody in Winters right now wanted paratransit, they wanted a service at 7 o'clock in the morning, they couldn't get that because the V-line is set up at 9 o'clock.
Currently,
that's the way it works.
The hours of the old 620.
The old 620.
Yes.
Got it. And that's right.
I've got to kind of look.
Whatever. Yeah. So I think the 220, I don't know off the top of my head. Do you know what the old 220 time is for?
I know we used to run the 220. Sorry, my name is Dave Romero.
Dave, are you representing TransDev tonight?
No, I'm representing White TV. Oh, you got right that?
Thank you.
Hi, Dave.
Good evening, members of the board. My name is Daisy Romero. I'm the current acting director here at Yellowbook, director of transit operations.
Yeah.
So regarding the question for the 220, so we used to have our 220 fixed route that ran 3 trips in the morning and then 3 trips in the evening. I believe it ran Monday through Friday as well as Saturday. Then we also have the 220C, which is known as the 220 commuter route that also ran a trip, I believe, in the early morning and then ran. I don't remember the exact hours off the top of my head because we did cut the service through COVID or as COVID was happening. But I do remember it ran pretty early in the morning. As the 220 commuter, I believe, started somewhere around 6 in the morning. So currently we are still offering the exact same paratransit service that we had just before COVID happened. So just to kind of give you guys an idea, that's basically what our paratransit service is right. We're basically running the exact same service we were pre-COVID.
What kind of ridership are you having, and what were those hours you didn't say?
The hours for
paratransit now.
For paratransit, I don't remember off the top of my head. I just know it starts pretty early in the morning.
Do we have early riders? Sorry, they left you.
No, that's fine. We would need to look at the regional data as far as what our Winters riders look like. I do know for Winters microtransit, it is pretty popular compared to 990. Typically, we see anywhere between close to 300 riders usually on the month for Winters compared to 990. But we would need to look at the regional numbers. Usually, when we collect our paratransit data, it's just one whole number. It's not necessarily based off the region, but it is something that we can begin to provide.
Thank you.
Just a couple last ones. Sorry. Thank you. And it's just overall, is there a sense or a reason for why we're seeing such high ridership? I mean, obviously people's behaviors have changed. COVID changed a lot of ways people are traveling, commuting. You see oftentimes the ridership, as we know, on fixed routes going down. Obviously this is more kind of a premium service, right, in terms of that, I guess, and it should be. But is there a reason as to why you guys think that's happened?
I mean, I can say that this is part of a national trend. Yeah. I mean, some of it has to do with changing demographics, the aging population. We certainly have that here in Yellow County. I also suspect, Courtney mentioned that we, our policy says that we verify eligibility every 2 years. In practice, I don't think that that's actually been happening.
So, like, you know, Cody mentioned doing a deep dive to actually look at and go look at everybody who's currently registered and see when's the last time that their eligibility was verified and kind of go through that process. So there may be some of that we need to take a closer look at. But I can say, yes, it is a premium service, absolutely. So if people are eligible for it, they're going to take it, because why wouldn't you? It's door-to-door, as opposed to, you know, and on the schedule that you provide. So it is a popular service, and we're certainly not the only ones who are experiencing this kind of surge.
Thank you. And last question, just quickly, was there engagement or with the riders and the hair in the fact where it talks a fair amount about, you know, the operators and staff at the application side of it? Was there engagement with the ridership around some of the changes that are being discussed here? And I know it went to the advisory committee and they discussed it, but.
Yeah, so we had one of the members of the advisory committee, their son actually rides the service, so we interviewed him for about an hour and a half. But we're planning to do more engagement within the next month between now and when we present it to be about this. So we'll have more kind of outreach on that front.
Be great, thank you.
Any additional board questions?
Yep, I got some down here. Oh, you've been very patient. Lucas, really appreciate this item. I think it's well overdue in terms of some of the upgrades. So really appreciate this presentation and the work that you all been doing. I think that first and foremost, changing on the name brings the service from like the mid-20th century into the 21st century. So thank you for that. There's many reasons why I think it's important to do it, but I really, really appreciate that. Some of the other changes that have been suggested around, make that obviously the online application being ADA accessible, that's probably a good idea. Since it's a paratransit service, we want to make sure it conforms to the federal law. And a variety of other reasons to do it as well, too. But I think I really appreciate those changes. A couple quick questions I have. Certainly, I really appreciate Director Early's comments around just not needing more information on ridership, the cost. Also, the times, I think, will be important. So for us to have a look at those three items, I think would be helpful as part of just being able to help provide some feedback. The item around winters, I really appreciated Director Lauren's questions about that. I think the question that I have is that in the staff report, there's definitely sort of discussion around the paratransit service to and from Vacaville, which I believe is only from winters to Vacaville. It's not from anywhere else in our service territory, is it? You can go anywhere that you'll bus from Woodland, from West Sacramento to Vacaville on paratransit. That's the question, I guess.
If it is within our six-month service area, yes, that is correct.
Okay, that's great news. That's good to know. I think it would be good to have the Vacaville item in the changes to service area and time proposed. I mean, it seems like that would be, it's discussed in the staff report, but it seems like it would be helpful to have it in the sort of the slide or just the chart here. I thought it was only from that. I thought it was only from winters, and I think the previous bus fix route bus service was only from winters to Vacaville. Was it? Yeah,
The 320 went from Davis to Vacaville via winter.
Yeah.
And the fee line, but for the fee line now, if you're in Davis, you can't take the fee line directly to winters. You have to go through winter. So
you need to
go to Vacaville. I'm sorry. You have to go. Yeah. Apologies. Yeah, the B line is limited. Yeah. The paratransit, you can go from Woodland or West Sacramento to Vacaville. Right. So the B line and the fixed route was only Davis to Winters to Vacaville.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Thank you. That's really helpful. That's really very helpful. One other question that I have with regard to, and I thought this is the case in terms of we started to touch on a little bit, but I just need some clarification. I was under the assumption, I think it's a federal rule, but paratransit trips must be located sort of within a half a mile fixed route service or something. So that is, we've heard this over time in Davis that there are, the Davis City Transit is not allowed to go for much, like more than a half a mile off of a fixed route via trans bus service. So is that not the same for yellow bus? I mean, I'm curious about that. So basically, there's a fixed route bus that runs like paratransit that cannot go, at least this is what we've been told for a long time in Davis, so it cannot go more than a half a mile away from a
I think drop by flying.
So it's up to you. It's up to us. The minimum is that it has to be, they have to serve trips that are within a half mile of that corridor. But you, that's what the ADA requires. But you could go beyond the ADA and cover the entire community if that was desired.
So that's a change that, frankly, the state Davis needs to make. The reason I'm asking very specifically is because there are a number of, so currently, Davis Community Transit, the closest community transit bus line is along Lake Boulevard, which is more than half a mile away from a cluster of churches that are west of Davis, the Unitarian Church, Great Valley Christian Center, and First Baptist Church of Davis, all of whom have paratransit riders, and they don't call Davis Community Transit to take them there. They use yellow bus, treating for your deal, so special to do that. Because Davis Community Transit for a long time has said we cannot go beyond a half a mile from a fixed route bus line. So I didn't know if that was a federal rule. You're saying, yeah, it's a minimum. Any agency transit can exceed it.
Well, but that may be outside of their service area, if it's outside of the city of Davis. So that might actually be a separate issue,
okay,
where they're not, Unitrans does not operate service outside of the city of Davis, is my understanding.
And I apologize for getting the lead. I just want to make sure, though, that I'm trying to get prepared, but also make sure that, you know, there are riders that need to get to certain locations and just trying to figure out where they're able to, what service they're able to use or not. So just, okay, well, so I think a number of individuals use Yellow Bus Special currently to make those connections because the day-to-day transit service does not provide service, just about a mile or so west of town. So I'm curious about that. So happy to follow up with you all about offline on the fine line of that, really, can couple with that. I think that was it. We really do appreciate the work so far. I'm looking forward to our prep to sort of be able to have a little more detail, though, before we make sort of a final decision. But thank you for all the work. Appreciate it.
Director Lauren, who's the student, has some other questions.
Once I heard Director Lucas mention that he didn't need to get into the weeds, I felt really at home and for women, living in the cuts or the weeds. I just want to get into the detail that the city of Winters is in Yolo County. We know that. We know that part of the boundary is Solano County, but most people don't know that it is also part of the Solano College District. Our taxes, our city taxes, our house, our property taxes, we go to Solano County. For the Solano Community College District, many of our residents also go to Kaiser. So their main hospital service for Winters would be in Bethesda also. So although we are a beloved part of Yolo County, we are also part of Solano County in our services, and that's why the bus goes to the locations in Solano County. So I just wanted to get into the weeds on that. People didn't know that are on the diet now. Thank you.
I do appreciate that clarification, Director Lauren. I was thinking, why are we transporting people in other jurisdictions?
I was thinking the same thing.
We really want them coming into our communities.
We've long transported people from Yolo County to Sacramento County via paratransit because that's where the hospitals are.
For medical appointments, I understand it, but for other needs, I'd rather keep our people in the county. But, what this whole conversation has revealed to us is we are way in need of having conversations and having a better understanding about this. Thank you for what you've done for tonight. And I think we'll have a good discussion about it next time. Hopefully, we'll get more ridership data so we can understand. I mean, I know whenever I'm offered an appointment, I'm usually given a choice. I can say 10 o'clock works or 2 o'clock works. It doesn't have to be at 8 in the morning or whatever. So, I do not know how much flexibility our paratransit riders have in their appointment scheduling and things like that. But if getting to work, then that's obviously a special thing. So, Andrew, I would like to assess that based on what our experience has been. If we see, we're starting an hour early, but only getting one person, maybe that's something we should think twice about. But I think all of us are in agreement. We want to serve our community, and Dave's going to help us, and you're going to make recommendations based on the data. We'll look forward to that next time. Is there any concluding remarks any board member wishes to make? I don't think I invited public comment on this issue. Any member of the public wants us to talk about our fulfilling our paratransit responsibility?
I'll keep the staff offline.
All right.
Then that will conclude the discussion for tonight. I would just like to thank my colleagues because I felt all the questions brought out interesting aspects of this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Courtney. All right, that takes us to our last item of the evening report, administrative report. That is item 7, the update on the YOLO Active Transportation Corridors project. Autumn, again, would you introduce the item, please?
I will. Thank you so much. While we're making that shift change over here, I just want to say I'm excited that we are finally bringing this item back to you. This is a project that we applied for funding and won the funding in 2021. We selected a consulting team that came up with a scope of work, and then we sat on our hands and waited for over a year while the FHWA, the funder, we went through the process of getting all the paperwork finalized. So I'm very excited that we're now kicking this off, and that our wonderful assistant planner, Brenda Lomelli, this is her first time presenting to the board, and she's going to be leading this project and leading this presentation.
Have you told her to be
fine? So with that, I'll turn it over to Brenda.
Thank you. I think Anna went to my slide before. Hi, members of the board and members of the public. My name is Brenda Lomelli. I'm an assistant planner here at UOPD. Our team is extremely excited, again, like our executive director mentioned, about the YOLO Active Transportation Corridor, known as the YOTU project. I'm going to start with a little bit of background, because I know that we have a few new board members, and I think it will be a great refresher for all of us, because it's been a while. So what is the YOLO-TD? It's basically, a plan of multi-use trails that will help address mobility barriers of low-income and minority residents of YOLO County. I've been a resident of YOLO County for 20 years, so seeing this project, I was a teenager, so I guess I wish when I was younger, this actually was the project that YOLO TV could have, because I know that there's a lot of different communities that really don't have access. We could talk about Madison, Sparta, YOLO County, the city of YOLO, or the little town of YOLO. The planning project will build upon YOLO TV's mission, and I know they recently have a lot of efforts to explore how public interest define transportation, especially on the isolated and disadvantaged areas. YOLO TD was awarded $1.2 million in federal funds from the RAISE grant program back in 2021. So the YOTU will accomplish two objectives. Sorry, Heather, thank you. So basically it was established long-term vision and planning document for a county-wide active transportation corridor. And the second objective will be established priorities and complete construction documents for at least one and up to three corridors, if funding permits. With the assistance of our partner agencies at YOLO TD, we selected a consulting team led by Farron Pierce. They're well known in the Sacramento region, and I know they have worked on multiple projects for the county of YOLO. So they're a really sharp team. So the consulting agreement has two phases, which will be the planning and the outreach, which that's the current phase that we're in. And then the second phase will be the design and engineering. So the scope of work basically addresses the initial planning and outreach phase. So these are the components in the task are project management, existing conditions assessment, public outreach and community engagement, and plan preparation. Okay. And here you can tell the project schedule. The dotted lines show where we are currently with the project. I don't know if you can really tell, we can see that line. The goal is to finish this task by September 2024. Next slide. So we're pretty busy here at YOLO TD. So the good news after, so much hold up and contracting delays, the YOLO TD and our consultants were able to do a kickoff meeting. And the attendees reviewed and confirmed, a sample of the things that we kind of talked about was the scope of work, key project deliverables and project schedules. Those were a few of the things that we talked about. So currently, the stuff that we're working on, YOLO2D with Sarah Tears, you can see the picture there. That's identification of locations for bike and pedestrian data collectors. There are about 50 currently on that picture.
Yeah, I think there's like 30. We need to get that down to like 15, because that's what we have budget for. But the purpose of that is just to kind of show what, you know, what the conversations are that are occurring between us and our consulting team. And they'll go out and they'll put cameras, and so we'll get you know, real bicycle counts at the 15 final locations that we select. And that'll be helpful in informing what the demand for bicycling is between the you know, the urbanized areas. And we're also going to be using some big data, cell phone based data that shows origins and destination pairs. So that'll help us also get a better sense of demand for the people who aren't currently bicycling between the cities, but possibly would if the facilities were there.
Thank you, Brian. And also we're doing existing condition analysis, developing a project logo and style guide. Next slide, please, Heather.
That's cute.
So here you can see three logos, three top logos designs that staff picked. My favorite is the middle one, but Brian and I have been having a battle here. So these are the potential logos that you will see as the Yellow Active Transportation Corridor project. Next slide, please.
Hold on, we're still bickering about this.
Do you think or do we think?
Okay,
very much.
Real question. We would love your input. Go for it.
We like them all. We were just kidding. We're sorry.
All right.
We're not picking yet. Right.
Yeah,
I won't pick until you tell me.
Yeah. We welcome your feedback on anything in this presentation.
Apparently we like art. We all just focus on those pictures. Sorry about that.
I think we've got one more slide.
All right.
Okay.
So what's coming up? So basically we have the 3 minute preliminary outreach in the fall and extensive outreach starting 2024. So you will definitely be overseeing a little bit more of Brian and I. And we're extremely excited about this project. Again, being an individual that has, you know, worked and lived in Yellow County for the past 20 years, it makes me extremely excited to see that, you know, we're actually focusing on smaller communities from, you know, urban to unincorporated. So thank you.
Brenda, will the outreach include interviews with the individual directors of the district?
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Will the outreach include individual interviews with the directors of the school?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Now they will.
Just want to make sure. That concludes your presentation.
It concludes our presentation. Any questions, comments, Brian Evan is right next to me. He's the expert. I just jumped in on this project and I'm excited, but I'm a little nervous, so.
Yeah, she assumes project management responsibility kind of midstream, but I do have some institutional knowledge dating back to, you know, and I inherited the project midstream back in, you know, March of 2022, but, I can hopefully answer any questions you might have. If you recall, back in November of last year, you did approve the scope of work and authorize staff to execute an agreement with Barron Peary. It's just taken us this long to actually launch the project.
Thank you. Congratulations, Brenda. You got it for your first presentation.
That was what I thought.
Yeah, Ollie, at the end of the table.
In the scope of work, it mentioned the UCA, the DRC, and I'm not familiar with that, so you illustrate what that is. That's the Center for Regional Change, and they're involved in our public outreach team. So they have specialized expertise in reaching out to underrepresented communities, and that was a really important aspect of the project, and one of the capabilities that the team had that sort of pushed them over the edge versus the other teams that we interviewed.
Okay. And then my last question, pick a logo. I really jump in and say, they all look great, but using them in association with the OOT logo would make sure people recognize this letter is part of the OOT.
Yeah. Yeah, I had Brenda add that, the slide with the logos that, and these are drafts that our consultants have given us, and that would be fun for, you know, you all sit to ruminate on them and share with us your opinion. Yeah, we do have some internal strife regarding our preferences, but I think, you know, we'll work it out, or you guys can do the time after.
That is enough. Thank you. Lucas? Thanks very much, Mr. Chair. A couple quick things. One, so first, appreciate all the work that's been done on this so far. If it's possible, I'll say I got the memo. There you go. Can you go to the slide that has the map, please? That's a very small map. There we go. Lots of red pins there. But so are these the what are those spread placements? Are they the bike pen data location areas, collection areas, or what are the places that it might be community meetings? What is
the potentially, those are the first set of locations that our consultants have proposed to us for collecting bicycle and pedestrian data. Keep in mind that the focus of this plan is in between the major cities, so we're not really going into the urbanized area to collect. Those are the first. And so those are the first 30 that they identified, and a lot of them make sense. But we do need to get them down to more to within the budget. If there's a lot of interest in retaining, certain locations, then we can probably borrow from other budgets elsewhere in the project.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I would love to be able to see that map a little more up close. For at least for me, and I call it for Director Lauren too, for this very particular reason, many people that ride their bicycle between Winters and Davis go through Solano County to do so. They do not take Russell Boulevard, they do not go over the 505 interchange, so these are outside of the boundaries of Yolo County. I'm not sure that there are any pinpoints in Solano County, but that is the absolute way that people ride. The vast majority of people who ride to and from between the rural areas between those two cities do not go within Yolo County, they go outside of Yolo and Solano County. So I think that's just an example. I can't tell because it's really far away, but I can see a couple pinpoints by where Winters is and a couple pinpoints a little bit closer over towards Davis, but not really sure, sort of. So anyway, just want to really specifically check in on that one. And then lastly, just with regard to the on page 65 of the contract, just there's talk about, the public outreach and community engagement portion, technical advisory committee, so we get that. But there are also tough lots to talk about steering committees, which includes for state record also shadows that are interested, stakeholders, public, private, nonprofit sectors, business community, ag interest groups, environmental interest groups, public health advocates, service providers, tribal governments, tribal communities, et cetera, et cetera. So we're really curious about the stakeholder service steering committee. I think there's any number of us would be interested in helping to provide some thoughts around who may be good to approach about serving on the steering committee. And then lastly, the meetings. There was a sort of outreach meeting. I see on page 69, two series of 10 in-person targeted outreach activities throughout Yolo County. Anticipated locations include, but are not limited to, or Blatt says not limited to, Cape A. Esparto, Madison, Dunnigan, Zamora, Yolo, Nice Landing, Parksburg, El Rio Villa, and Yolo JJ with the Nation. I do think Winters should be a part of that in the city, but El Rio Villa, is very, very close to the city of Winters, certainly, but that's the only real item I would just add and make sure that we sort of, wouldn't be bad to just sort of maybe check in with the board about potential locations for some of those in person for outreach meetings. Thanks so much.
Although it's premature, because we're just starting the process, I'm going to put it out there that it's essential for me that we get a key byway between Davis and Woodland.
Yeah.
We are proposing this wonderful new research and tech park. Many of the people who will work there will come to the Davis community, and if they have a safe, reasonable, hopefully off-road way to commute, they will do so. And many people in Woodland work at the university are motivated and it would make such a difference if we had that place. So I'm just going to keep bringing it up until we get it done.
Okay.
Thank you. For coming.
I just have just one level setting question. I appreciate the map. It's not helpful. Just real fast for me. What would be helpful, just if it does come back, is the level setting of just the areas. I mean, like, just giving general unincorporated names on there of a founder or just so I could have a better idea of just a cool project.
Yeah, I guess we probably, it's one well taken. We are sort of immersed in the project and sort of corroborating on the assumptions there was a certain level of
nope.
Understanding. So
not at all.
I missed the mark on that. But yeah, we'll definitely make sure to provide that in the future.
It's my first time seeing it. So yeah. I mean, I appreciate the immersion. I really do. Yeah.
One thing I would love to share now, because it got burned into my head when I was doing the lobby meetings to get this money, is that there are three priority corridors that we identified in the grant proposal, which are Davis to Woodlands, completing the path from Davis to Winters, and then West Sacramento to Clarksburg is the third. Now those are kind of the pre-identified priorities, but then of course it is called for doing an entire countywide plan that may also identify other priorities through that process. But those were the three that were specifically called out in the application as priority corridors. So I just want to throw that out there as a helpful talking. Very helpful.
It would be nice to have that in that report.
Okay.
Any additional questions from the board members?
Yeah.
I just wanted to use this opportunity to echo what Director Frederick said is exact for me. If you really want to hang out with bike riders Saturday or Sunday at Steady Eddie's in Winter, you'll have people from just Sacramento, Davis, Woodland, all over as far as they can ride in a day.
I will say one of the things, I'm interested to hear you say this, one of the things we've talked about is making sure that we're getting beyond the sort of more affluent recreational riders and getting to the folks who are bicycling as a means of primary means of transportation, because they are very different. And so, you know, to the extent that we can get your feedback on that, we want to make sure that we are drawing in and not just hearing from the bike club.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not that they're not important, but they're not the only ones that we want to hear from.
And I also think, you know, getting used 5 days a week as opposed to 2 days a week should have some bearing on our decision making.
Okay. Carl? Yes, one more thing. And I said it originally during this project that was being started, is the also the idea of looking down to Dixon and trying to think of a connector to come down to Dixon. So that same very bikeable, but it is the edge of the county, but this report I think will go further than the edge of the county. That's it. Thank you.
All right. Everybody's had their say. It's 9 on 9 and 7. Mm-hmm. All right. The public, I think I saw Alan coming forward with the card. Alan? Floor is yours. 3 minutes.
Thank you. I had an interesting conversation with my wife, bought an e-bike, and we put the bikes on Amtrak, and we went to Denver. We rode on bicycling in Denver for 4 days. We went to Salt Lake City on the train line, bicycled to Salt Lake City, went to Reno and right along the bicycle line. So we experienced the bike trails in three different cities. We've also taken the trip to the bicycle to Oakland and bicycled down there. Go to Denver. See what they've done there. They have an amazing system. It's really, please use concrete on your bike paths. Don't use asphalt. If you're really serious, Denver's made a major effort. Signage are amazing things on the bike paths, and it's used by everybody. It's really amazing. We went to dinner at a place near the Capitol Building in Denver, and we rode the bike trail for 3/4 of the route. It's just amazing. I'm also concerned that basically we're restricted to just the low income. I think there's a lot of low income people in Davis. I think we shouldn't neglect them. They need to feel transportation. Please do that. And tourism. The more multi-purpose we can make these lanes, the more they're going to use. I think egg tourism is an amazing opportunity, both with e-bikes and scooters and whatever. Please accommodate that. We're going to change the way. I think homeless one of the things we saw on the bike trails all in those cities. Getting the homeless needs to be planned to deal with that, so they don't make it. Because people feel safe on it, especially women, is really important. I think the local should be as simple as possible. Because you have to do the trail. It's just, you got to work with all this stuff. I make it really, really simple. I'm concerned these are a little bit complex. And if you want to model in terms of what bike trails can actually carry, go to Denver, see what their uses of it is. Because models, you can't tell how many people would use a class one off loop until you build it. It's like trying to predict how many people use a ferry when you don't have a ferry built. So I guess not only what's existing is your bike riders, your weekend people or whatever. So I think you want to make this, do it in actual some other models for other cities that actually have amazing bike systems. And the bike system and the transit system just can work seamlessly. We used to re-roll it out and just transit back. It was an amazing sort of adventure. We want to take a great adventure. Bicycles are my answer. That's a great thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Helen. I want to mention, I ride my bike to Davis back on Sunday to the church in Davis. And this Sunday, as I came back on 99W, the bike lane has basically had so many cracks in it, and the weeds that are literally 2 feet high growing up in it. So, I mean, it literally is not very safe. And even along Cobell Boulevard, I ride in the street, there's a bike lane in the street as opposed to a very wide asphalt, because the wide asphalt is so bumpy, it's just almost intolerable. So as we go forward with this, we might even think, how are we going to maintain our bike lanes in the long term? You know, is it going to be a countywide district to do this? I mean, that may be, we may have to figure out a funding mechanism so that these areas remain safe and, mm-hmm. and functional, and not just to put them in place and then forget them. All right, any more comments on this? All right, that concludes item 7, and that brings us to the remaining area, which is verbal reports, and I'm going to start with Mr. Gold. Anything that happened?
I'll jump in real quick. We did have a launch of a new service at our Sacramento campus, the UC Davis Health System, with Stack RT, the partner in this new service from Elk Grove, a direct commuter shuttle that started last week, and it was really a great launch. Stack RT is the best first week of any of their prior service launches, so we're excited for that, and it is one that matches up with the Causeway Connection service. So a rider from Elk Grove who works at UC Davis in Davis could transfer at the health system and then take the Causeway Connection into Davis. So it is a new launch of our service, and one that we're super excited about. So thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Mr. Kerr.
Thank you.
Mr. Chapman.
Nothing's fine.
Dr. Prune.
Okay.
Ms. Lauren.
I wanted to use this opportunity to invite you all to Winters on September 30th for the Carnitas Festival. It's a free festival with music and dancing. There's a banda from Oaxaca from 7:30 to 10:30. It is all fun, all the adult beverages and so forth. All the kids' area is free. It's going to be great. And the best part is that there's going to be a microbus. Our beeline will be there for people to tour and really get familiar with, because the YTD is part of that festival. So come on down, see you in Winters at Rotary Park on Saturday, September 30th, as early as 2:30, as late as 10:30. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Sophia, for a nice invitation. I would like to mention that we're actually doing the kickoff for the UBeeline service on September 18th. Autumn, would you furnish us with the details, please?
So I go ahead and launch it in my executive director's report, or
we're done up here, so please.
Okay, great. Yeah, so on the D-line, so we had our soft launch in Woodland and Nightline today. The service has been, and the app has been available in Winters for several weeks, but it did soft launch today. The public launch is next Monday, September 18th. And the marketing rollout is underway for that. We've got our drivers, we've got our vehicles. We have had some minor issues with the new vehicles that have popped up, but they're all being addressed, and we feel confident that we're ready to launch. So yes, you're having a ribbon cutting at 11:30 at the Woodland Chamber of Commerce in downtown Woodland on Monday the 18th. We'll have Les Brasas. We'll be providing lunch. We did send out an invitation that everyone from the public is welcome. Just please RSVP so we make sure we have enough chairs and food. And I think that our distinguished chair will be gracing us with emceeing and some speeches, and we hope to have a few other VIPs there as well. I would love to see all of you there. So very excited that things are moving along with the V-Line.
It's a dream come true.
Thank you. A few other items just wanted to give you an update on. The Woodland Transit Center study. This is underway. We're making good progress on it, working with the city staff as well as our consultants on identifying a new location for our Woodland Transit Center closer to downtown. Moving a bit slower, it'll be coming to you possibly in October. I think that's the hope. Also, my annual performance review is supposed to be this month. MRG is working on it. I think it's talked to most of you at this point. So they tell me it will be at the next board meeting. We'll be doing a closed session for that. Also, we're continuing to work on our compensation study. We're taking some extra time to make sure it's being done right, working with consultants and making sure we have the right comparable agencies. So we'll be bringing that first to the ad hoc committee for compensation next month, and then we'll see how quickly it can come to the board. But we're still waiting for a good draft from the consultants that we can bring to this, as well as to the staff. Two other things I wanted to announce. A few months back, we along with UC Davis, applied for a Caltrans Sustainable Communities Planning Grant to update the campus-wide transportation master plan to look at not just transportation locally within the city of Davis, but really looking at the entire commute shed for UC Davis and what kind of changes needs to be made. We just found out last week that we did get that grant, so we're very excited to partner with UC Davis on that. I think that'll be a great partnership. And then also one of the things that is still on our to-do list is that looking at an expansion of the V-Line service area to the town of Yolo, which sits right between Woodland and Knights Landing, our two service areas, so it's kind of a natural fit to provide some transit to that community, which previously did have fixed route service but hasn't for quite some time. So we are hoping to bring that to you soon. We're continuing to work on that, and we plan to bring it to you later in the fall. So that is my update.
Out of the absence of a representative from Transdev, is there anything to report on what's happening with him?
You know what? We have to do. I believe Michael is on the phone. He's got strep throat. Sorry, how are you?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear? Yes, I'm here. Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Excuse me for not being in person, but I'm a little bit under the weather, and I figured I probably shouldn't be in there with all of you.
Thank you for your thoughts.
So, as Autumn mentioned, we have the drivers that we needed. There was definitely a challenge. We're able to get there, and we're actually going even above the number that we're planning on, we're working for. I'd say we have our number, and then we also have additional 7 trainees in class now. So it's not going to say we're going to have too many drivers. It allows us to add numbers to where we can do additional bid lines for standby operators, remaining as to cover for vacancies for everything from vacation to call offs for a day, just to ensure we have no missing service and leave on time.
Thank you for that question. So you just get yourself well and come back, okay?
Thank you, sir. Have a good evening.
All right. Yeah, are there any ad hoc committee reports tonight?
The only ad hoc committee that has met is the Poland Advanced Planning Committee meeting, and we covered that update as part of the interview.
And I think you've already hinted about the long-range calendar, so we've covered that as well. All right. So that brings us to adjournment. Any additional? All right. Well, as I see, we are going to meet again on October 9th at 6 p.m., and that's when we will be back together again. Thank you, everyone. We know it takes a lot of work to put these meetings together. We thank our staff. Thank you, all of that. Thank you, Heather and Kimberly. Thank you, everybody. All right,
we are adjourned.
Thank you.
I think we're reminding me, okay, I don't know.